Welcome to Comadres y Comics.
Comadres y Comics is a podcast hosted by three Latina women.
We highlight the Latinx presence in the comic book industry as creators, characters, and fans.
Join us as we talk chisme, comics, fandom, and beer.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Comadres y Comics. This is episode 209. We're your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Welcome back, ladies. How's everything doing? How's everyone doing?
I'm freezing my everything. Ass off. That's how I'm doing.
It is very cold down here in Southern California as well. But as I shared with you both earlier, I am trying to combat the cold by drinking hot tea once a day. Mm-hmm. I am motivated by the fact that my grandmother drank tea every single day, just regular Lipton black tea. And she lived to be 100 years old. And so I'm convinced that tea had something to do with it.
Yeah, it sounds like it did. Lipton black tea, huh?
Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome. I used to go, my mom would make me go outside early morning when it's cold and dewy and freezing and go pick, what was it called? Lemongrass. So we should go make tea.
Oh, interesting. Oh.
Yeah. I still remember very long, long leaves.
Yeah.
I wonder where she got the seed for that. Like right now, I've been looking like in places because it smells good too and it repels mosquitoes.
Oh,
so okay. I've been wanting to get a plant going here, but I've only seen it on Amazon, and they could send you the live one, like a live little stock or the seeds.
Huh.
So I often wonder, I'm going to ask my dad, see if he knows exactly where he got the lemongrass plant that we used to have. It was humongous. Like, you know, it was great. So she would make me do that or go to the lemon tree that we had and pick the lemon leaves and then just boil those.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Uh-huh. Wow. Also, my grandma just had boring yerba buena.
That's not boring. It tastes good. We also had... Well, right now we have a guava tree, and apparently you can boil the guava leaves and make guava tea.
Really?
Did not know that. Yeah,
yeah, and that's
good for you too.
That makes sense because you can kind of do that with the lemon leaves too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course with cinnamon sticks, you could just put them in there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just recently started drinking this tea that's supposed to be good for diabetes, and it's very delicious. You don't even need to put sugar in it.
Yeah, I don't put sugar in my tea. So
that kind of defeats the purpose.
Because you can't taste the tea.
No, but it's for some reason it has a sweet flavoring to it. It's
yeah,
weird.
Yeah.
But anyway. Nice.
I mean, are some of our beers sweet when we know they don't put like sugar or something in them? It's just the impression or the taste of it.
It's witchcraft.
Yeah, witchcraft.
Witchcraft, I tell you.
She's a witch. Burner.
All right, guys. Now it's chisme de la semana. And I have a little bit of chisme, just a little bit. So apparently, yeah, we got an email that says, good morning and congratulations on officially joining us for the 2024 Latinx Comics Art Festival in Modesto. It's a five-year celebration. Yes. And it's going to be happening March 22nd through the 23rd. That's a Friday and a Saturday. So we are officially part of the Latinx Comic Art Festival 2024. Ladies,
yay!
That's exciting. I'm totally excited. I can't wait. Also, in chisme, we will be recording a Las Platicas episode. So please check out our YouTube. It's coming up later this month. We are in February, Black History Month. And also, just to let you know, we will be putting out a Las Platicas episode. So we're totally excited about that. That's some good chisme. So keep an eye on our YouTube channel and subscribe. Don't forget to subscribe.
But like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe. And share. All that good stuff. Also, in recent chisme news, actor Gina Carano, on Tuesday, she's suing Lucasfilm and the Walt Disney Company for over her 2021 firing from The Mandalorian.
Oh.
It said that it's a wrongful termination suit, and Elon Musk is supporting her.
Aye, aye, aye.
That's, yes, I know. So that's some interesting news. I wonder how that's going to go over.
Is he trying to make Gina Carano his 19th wife?
Remind me, was this because she came out as anti-vax and was like, it's a conspiracy, and like was spouting like right-wing conservative stuff?
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Okay. That. Yes.
So she refused to get vaccinated, and you couldn't go on set if you weren't vaccinated. So she got fired. Mm,
got it.
Yeah, that's pretty sad. But it's very interesting to see what's going to happen with that, because that's kind of a new thing, I believe. Like, well, not wrongful termination, but because of like things that she posted on Twitter, or now X, kind of situation where social media is being highlighted in the suit. So that's going to be very interesting to see how that goes. So that's what I have for chisme. That's all for now, guys. All right, guys, now it's time for On Our Radar. Kristen, what is on your radar?
So on my radar is the book that's been on every freaking buddy's radar this week, so much so that it's been sold out all over the local comic book stores, not just here in the South Bay or in Los Angeles, but nation and dare I say worldwide, because I see all of the posts that the retailers are making on the retailer groups that I'm part of. But if you did not know, Ultimate Black Panther number one came out this week. And Ooh. For whatever reason, it just shot like into the universe of how popular it was, and sold out almost immediately. I was at a comic book store today, and a guy came in and said, "Hey, got any of those Ultimate Black Panthers?" And the guy behind the counter kind of laughed and said, "Not as of 2 hours on opening day, the day it came out."
Wow. So it sold out in 2 hours.
It took 2 hours for them to sell out of their copies. Yes. Damn. So I was like, what's all the hype about this book? So it is Black History Month, and Black Panther was definitely a very iconic Black character in the Marvel Universe, very iconic movie as well. And it is written by Brian Hill, which is a very, very amazing creator that I have read a lot of his stuff, and actually used to be local here to LA. I don't know if he is anymore, but is a super, super nice guy, and had come into the shop a couple of times, and was just always very supportive of the store. I was forced to buy it digitally because it's the only way they could get it. But those of you who may not be following or may not have a lot of information about Marvel books, there was back in the day, and even now every once in a while, there is an alternate universe called the Ultimate Universe. And there are alternate versions of characters, most notably Miles Morales came out in the Ultimate Universe. Now he's part of the regular, what is it, 626 universe? Earth 626 Earth?
616.
Earth 616. Okay. Yes. And so anyhow, there are lots of Ultimate Universe characters and storylines that are very beloved by fans. So when this new Ultimate Universe started up, there was a lot of hype, a lot of talk, and the Black Panther book, for whatever reason, really was one of the ones that people looked forward to. So I read it today, and it's actually really good. I really enjoyed it. The storyline is basically that there is a the maker, this bad guy, created an alternate universe where there are no superheroes, but of course there are villains. And they want to take over the world, as villains do. And there is one nation that they have not quite yet have control over. And of course, that's Wakanda. And so the villains who are coming to basically assert themselves over Wakanda are Khonshu and, oh no, I don't remember who the other one was, but basically Moon Knight. Moon Knight's, they're not called icons, what are they called? I don't remember and I didn't take a note on it, but no, but I'll, it's not important to the story. But anyhow, so they are coming to basically take control over Wakanda. And we are in a Wakanda where T'Challa is the king, and T'Chaka is still alive. I've read so many books where he's dead or died or whatever, but in this particular universe, he's still alive in issue one. And but something does happen. And there is, I think, a storyline that kind of goes along with T'Challa's personality that I've read in other books, where he definitely is not quick to war. He wants to take his time. He wants to kind of get a lay of what's going on. And that's kind of how he is here, where people are telling him, hey, you know, people are dying and these entities are coming and things are happening and you're just sitting here. And he's like, no, you know, I need to be able to figure out what is going on. And there was an amazing quote by his father, T'Chaka, who when T'Challa, Black Panther, is like, no, I'm waiting. His father tells him, one should only know they are an enemy to the king after they have been destroyed. So, basically, everybody is like, we got to make a move. We got to do something. And T'Challa is kind of just like sitting back until something happens that moves him to basically protect Wakanda and to, as he at the end of the book says, go to war. So it is a really good book. I really enjoyed it a lot because, like I said, we are in Black History Month. It is a great book for us to highlight on my radar. And I do look forward to reading more of this story. And actually, if you are a speculator or someone who is really into collecting, I would keep your eye on all of these Ultimate books because there are a lot of first appearances in these books because they're all first appearances of this new Ultimate universe. So it's the a new Ultimate version of whatever character. So back in the day, no one cared about little cute Miles Morales, and now look where we are. So
now Ultimate Fallout number 4 is worth hundreds.
Yeah. So you might want to get your hands on that. But I'm assuming Marvel's going to do a second print. You can find it digitally and read it. But if you see any first copies out there, they are all pretty much marked up to about $25. So that's what you're looking forward to finding a first printing. But I'm guessing that there's going to be some second, third, maybe even fourth printings coming out here soon.
Wow, that's kind of incredible. I mean, just that one shop you were in sold out in 2 hours.
Yep.
That's cool. I mean, that must be some anticipation. I wonder if there was a line. I mean, there's a lot of buzz around this. That sounds really awesome. All right, guys, now it's time for La Hora de la Cervecita. And today we're drinking 1554. It is from New Belgium Brewing Company, which I didn't even know existed, guys.
New Belgium?
You did? But I didn't. I didn't know there was a New Belgium brewery. So that's
like
pretty interesting.
I feel like we've had beer from them before. But
from New Belgium?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Probably. We drank so much beer, though.
Right?
On that's and true. Off the podcast.
Yes. Yeah. This brew is a surprisingly bright taste and dry chocolatey finish. It's not a porter. It's not a stout. It's 1554. Very interesting. I'm very, very excited. I think the they're located in Colorado, I believe. And anyway, so I'm very excited to try this one out. The can is very simple. It has a nice building in the front. And it has these really cute little like decorative like swirly things. But I think the cool part is the big font on the 1554. So yeah. And this actually was something I bought in Costco.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
So it is a dark ale brewed with spice.
Oh.
That really interests me. And it says that it is a rebirth of a lost beer style called Zwart, which is Flemish Zwart for black. And it uses gruet for bittering. And the oldest reference to Zwart beer comes from 1285. That's the year 1285. So I'm wondering if 1554 is a reference to a year. And that building probably has some significance as well. And if you all don't know, a lot of Belgian beers were made specifically by Trappist monks. And you can only get a specific style of it from these monks. There's a lot of history there, and it's very interesting. And I couldn't find much just doing a search right now really quick, but I'd be interested to find out more history of what the significance of 1554 is.
Yeah, most definitely. And it's 6%. But yeah, the building reminds me of the girl with the pearl earring. So, but I think that was Dutch based. I don't remember. I can't go into the whole world map right now. But I mean, the building does look very old. It looks like it's really cool. Noise. I just want the beer.
I do
just
like give how me the it beer. Smells. The initial sniff test is pretty good.
Yes.
Oh my god, tastes pretty damn good.
Hmm.
Right.
Ooh, yeah, that's really good.
That doesn't taste like beer.
Like. It doesn't. And it has low carbonation too. I don't know.
You know what? And I mean this in the best possible way. It tastes like spicy White Claw.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And look, I am not a White Claw. I used to be a White Claw, the hater. I am not a White Claw hater anymore. They're actually really good. But oh, what is another? Usually I'm pretty like on point with the descriptions. This one
it does have that kind of chocolatey finish though.
No, it does.
Mm-hmm. You know what? This tastes exactly what I've always thought like mead or M-E-A-D.
Oh, yeah, mead, yes.
That tastes like exactly how I always thought mead should taste like. Because I had mead once and I didn't like it.
But they have it at the brewery here, Sarah, you and I went to, where they have...
Isn't it Lincoln Brewery? Lincoln Works?
I don't remember what it's called. But
yes, they have mead there.
Yeah, they have mead there. And so I always want to order mead and then before every drink, say, for Asgard.
Yeah, and they had different types of mead there.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's called SoCal Vibes Company.
There you go. Yeah, they've changed over the years.
Yes. Yes. I always just Google breweries near me, and that one comes up all the time, especially since we have Phantom Carriage is no longer in this area. I know, they were so good. But anyway, so yes, mead. It does have a mead taste. There's low carbonation. There's definitely that backward kind of like chocolatey flavor. And yes, during the initial drinking of it, you do have like a little bit of spice, drop on your tongue, which I really enjoyed. I'm really surprised this is this good, honestly, because it came in a Belgium variety pack at Costco.
Okay, cool.
Yes, and so
you find the good stuff at Costco.
Yeah, and you know it's limited, so you have to like rush into it. Like you can't just be like, "Oh, I'll come back next week or next month." No, you got to get it then and then. Yeah. So this was like, I believe, a special packet that had like, I think, three or four different brews on in there, including Voodoo Ranger, which was weird.
Oh, really?
They had, yeah, they had a Voodoo Ranger. They had this one. They had a Flat Tire, I think, and then something else. But yeah, no, I mean, I know I tasted it because it was a box and I drank the box and I saved these for the podcast, but just tasting it again and actually reading up on it, it makes a whole difference. I mean, I think your beer experience, it gets expanded when you actually do a little bit of research on the actual brewing, the inspiration, and even some of the ingredients. I think that really helps out with actually just really enjoying the beer and sitting down and really being in the feelings with the beer. So this one, wow, it really blew my socks off. What do you guys think?
I am enjoying it a lot, especially, I mean, I feel like I should either be like a barmaid in a dingy tavern, like either serving this or like IDK. Like, it should definitely be in like a big like thing. Jesus Christ, my words.
What are those? Are those the boots, the boot glasses, or the big beer mugs?
The big beer mugs, definitely. Yeah. And
yeah, I need a wench to service
to me. I'm a wench. but no, I really like. I like how the like that is. I need to expand my. The other mead that I have tasted or what it tastes like, because like I think I've only had it once. No, yeah, I've only had it once and I did not like it. And I think this is what it should taste like. I don't know. I like how this tastes. So
Voodoo Ranger is brewed by New Belgium.
Oh.
That's so you definitely have drank in New Belgium. You've definitely drank Voodoo Ranger.
Oh my God.
and Fat Tire is New Belgium too. So here's the thing about New Belgium. It is
okay.
It is a very widely distributed, quote unquote, craft beer. I would say that beer snobs would not say that New Belgium is a craft beer. Just like they don't, just like how when people turn their nose up at Bella's Point when they got bought out by the big beer company. I don't know if it was Anheuser-Busch or who bought them. But here's the thing. I always laugh when people are like, oh, you're a sellout. Like, what is the point of having a business if it's not to fucking be successful? And so I'm like,
right.
It's ridiculous when I hear that. I do, though, understand how when companies grow very big, some of the little like idiosyncrasies and like cool things that they did get lost because now they have to be made for such a larger scale that to save money, some of the bigger companies might cut corners. And so I do know that people complained that Ballast Point, when they got bought out, things changed and they weren't the same. And I can see that, but why are you going to put people down for being successful? You know what I'm saying? And
yes.
So like I enjoy Voodoo Ranger. I enjoy Bella's Point still. I enjoy Maui Brewing Company is another one. Like it's just something that I think, and this is coming from a self-proclaimed ex beer snob. Like I enjoy myself the hell out of a Modelo these days, and I am proud of it.
I know. A little shocked. but I get it. I mean, I'll use a Modelo for a Michelada for sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So anyhow, the good thing about it, my point being, is that these beers are widely available. Like you can find New Belgium at Target and probably Walmart. And so I definitely would recommend that you go and try to find 1554 because I really enjoy it a lot. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. It definitely has a classic brewing taste. Like for instance, I mean, I don't know, man. There's something definitely magical about this for sure.
Well, are you ready to rate it?
And I just got educated on New Belgium being the brewery behind Voodoo Ranger, which I thought the brewery was called Voodoo Ranger.
So I am not going to hold that against you, given that most of the times that you're drinking Voodoo Ranger, you're drunk on a pirate ship.
Pirate ship. Pirate ship. That's like my favorite, okay? I'm going to hold all my meetings on the pirate ship. You want to see Comadres y Comics? You want to meet Sarah? Come on the pirate ship.
Incredible.
Anyway, what is our rating scale, Kristen?
So we have a 5-point rating scale where 1 out of 5 is very unsatisfied. A 2 out of 5 is just regularly unsatisfied. A 3 out of 5 is neutral. A 4 out of 5 is satisfied. And a 5 out of 5 is very satisfied. And if a beer just will not fit onto our scale, we give it a Super Saiyan. And I am going to give it a 5 out of 5. It's not quite Super Saiyan for me, but I definitely really, really enjoyed it. I would drink it again. And I'm very surprised at how much that chocolatey spiciness does come through. And it's such a great like mixture. So I giving it a 5 out of 5.
Oh, I'm definitely going to give it a 5 out of 5. It's very satisfying. I've drank it before, but I probably drank it while I was drinking other beers. So I didn't really specifically kind of focus on it. And I definitely had other flavors in the back of my taste buds, but a 5 out of 5 for sure. Like really enjoying this elegant taste. I really like all the crisp, like notes, the crisp flavor notes. So very satisfying. What about you, Jen?
I really enjoyed it. I think I don't really know what to expect because also sometimes I don't pay attention like to the beers, like the beers that I drink like basically outside of the podcast. I kind of look at them to see if they're like a porter or a stout or if there's something that I'm willing to try if it looks interesting enough. So I was pretty surprised when you said New Belgium was also the Voodoo Ranger because I like Voodoo Ranger. I just never paid it. I thought Voodoo Ranger was the like the like brewery, like their brewery was Voodoo Ranger and all they do is Voodoo Ranger. Apparently that is not that is not the case, but this is really, really good. And I think F it, like I think this is craft beer because it's different. It's it's not the normal and it's not sorry inundated with hops, so I'm gonna give it a 5 out of 5.
Wow, yeah, most
definitely. That's really great rating. But you know, also the brewing style was from a year 1285. I mean, that's got to say something. You know, finding this recipe from the year 1285, that's kind of freaking classic. I like it. I like this idea, and I'm really glad that you educated us today that New Belgium is the brewing company for Voodoo Ranger. So now it has an extra note of amazing. So that has been our beer review. All right, guys, now it's time for our book review. What are we reviewing today?
Today we are reviewing Black Word. It is a book by Lawrence Lindell, and it is let me see, how many pages is it here? About 200 and some pages, and it is a, I don't know, would you say that this is YA?
Yes, I would say it's YA.
I would say, so, yeah, it's also YA.
I think, okay, so I read most of it thinking that they were teenagers, but then the more and more I read it, I'm like, I think that they're young adults.
Yeah, so definitely early
like in
20s.
Their 20s. Yeah. Yes. But Sarah just educated me, because I didn't read the back matter, which I usually do, that Lawrence, we've met him before. He is the husband of Brina Nunez.
We have met him before.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And Brina is a Latina comic creator, and What are some of her things that we've...
Well, we definitely had her on Las Pláticas, yeah. And we talked about her comic. I think it was a web comic.
Yeah.
I can't remember off the top of my head.
We have so many. Well, I just found this out. So that's my excuse. But that's pretty cool that we've met him before. And he is a artist, musician, and educator from California. This is his little bio that he wrote. It says he makes a lot of comics and drinks a lot of coffee. And he is he's the founder of Linnea House. Remember the publishing company that they do together?
Yes.
So the back of the book says Black, Weird, Awkward, and Proud of It. Welcome to the club. So this is a story of, is it four or five? Four young adults who all basically met each other at a bookstore over the summer during an event that they had, and they kind of just associated together and bonded to each other over the fact that they all were marginalized in one way, shape, or form. Like the back says, they are all Black, weird, and awkward, and proud of it. So they started a club. And what was the club called again? Starts with an S.
The section.
Yeah. So they started this club where they wanted to basically have a safe space for people to come and be Black, weird, and awkward. but oh my God. Okay. So I sent a message to you guys and Sarah responded, but Lala. characters. We have Lika, Amor, Tony, and Lala. And Lala is short for Latrice, and Lika is short for Alika. But they are I laughed out loud so many times with this book. They're at one of their meetings, and a new person shows up, and Lala's like, I don't know, he looks a little hotepy for me.
And she was right.
I know. There was so much comedy. Oh my God.
There was it was like, there were many moments where I was just like, LMAO.
And yes, she was right. And he got super, super like in their face about their quote unquote gay agenda. And so he actually starts yelling and is like, shut up with the pronoun BS, you man hating. And that's as far as he got. Well, he started out with the B word, but he didn't even get to finish because Lala punches him right in the face. And they get banned from the community center where they were having their meeting. And so the story kind of follows the group of them trying to find a new place to hold their meetings and then being faced with, now, how do we get people to our meetings? What is going to work? How do we reach this community that we want to be able to offer them a place to come and just hang out and be yourself and not be judged? And so they end up going on a journey. I think a lot of them have like a self-reflective journey. They are just friends that have this united goal. And I just really enjoyed, I don't want to give too much away, and I know you two will talk about stuff, but I just really enjoyed the story overall. And I thought that it was perfect, a perfect choice for us to read during Black History Month, because a lot of the themes talk about how Black creators get marginalized in a lot of artistic areas. And for example, they talk about having a zine fest, and it's a zine fest for just Black zine creators. And they specifically say in here that Black zine creators, you never see them or there's not that many. And so they decide that they're going to have an event that is just for Black zine creators. And I just thought that that was really a cool thing in a story for us to read during Black History Month. So, but Lala was my favorite for sure. And I think that Lawrence must listen to the podcast or have met Jen in a different life, because I feel like I just saw Jen in all of her comments. And so they do find a new place, and the owner of this new place, which is a bookstore, the bookstore they met at actually, he has a book fair, and he's like, look, you guys can use the place, but on one condition: you guys need to help at this book fair. And I just laugh because Lala's at the welcome table, and she's there with I don't know, I think maybe Amor was sitting next to her, but Amor is like, welcome. And Lala's just like, read books or die to the little kids.
Scaring the little kids. And then they're like scared, and they're like, oh man, I think she sacrifices people. You know what I found endearing was whenever there were these outbursts of comedy, there's like the audience, like either the children or, you know, or other people that are in the background, they make these little comments and you read them and you just laugh so hard because you're like, this is hilarious. And you know what I loved about the book and the characters? They all have these t-shirts, and yes, like, not only is the story being told in the dialogue and in the art, but it's also told in the t-shirts they wear.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because they all have these slogans, and I'm just like, you got to take the time to look at the panel and look at what they're wearing, because it's so powerful and it really moves and projects the story. I thought that was so hilarious. But yeah, it's the literacy fair that was presented back in the like 1970s by the owner of Books and Things. I love it. It's Books and Things, not Books and Things. Okay. And Things. Get it right. But yeah, but it's just so much fun. But between the chapters, you get the title of the chapter, and it's in English, and then it's in Spanish, and then it's in Swahili, and then I believe it's French, but I can't be certain. But I thought that was so cool, because that actually represents, I guess, like, that is meant to represent the background of each of these characters. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And I just, at first it was confusing to me, but then I was like, oh, I see what's going on. Mm-hmm. And that was just like a really like nice little Easter egg in the comic. We don't focus on their upbringing. We're focused on who they are as people and what they identify as. And I thought that was amazing. Their creativity throughout each character, everybody's so individual and so different. And I just thought it was just really amazing to read their story. And it's kind of their journey to like put out this club and the zine fest. Well, first it starts out as a club for people to have a safe space in order to be, you know, like, if Black and queer, Black and, you know, nerdy, Black and anime loving, Black, you know, just the whole weird spectrum where Black people cannot be themselves, you know, because there's a lot of Hotepi people out there and a lot of hate too, like, because they also highlight the hate that comes from social media, mm-hmm. which I thought was really interesting as well. And there was like a lot of, what do you guys call them? I want to say haters. I would say trolls. A lot mm-hmm. of trolls. Yeah, on their social media, trying to trying to get their stuff out there, trying to have their club, you know, represented out there, trying to trying to put the zine fest together and all of that. And it's such a struggle for them. And it gets, you even see parts in where some of the characters struggle with all this kind of like negative energy coming at them, and how they are constantly being like, you need stopped in the street and say, you need Jesus in your life, or you look satanic, or, you know, stuff like that. Like, everybody feels like it's so their job to bring them down, or have a comment on how they look, or have a comment on how they talk, or have a comment and an opinion about what they're doing and how they're, you know, introducing this gay agenda in the Black community. I mean, it's just so hard for them. It's full of lighthearted humor, but there's a really deep message in this book where a lot of people feel that it's okay for them to have these horrible opinions about a person and tell it to their face. I don't like that. Like, you can't just come up to a person and say, oh, you look like a devil worshiper. That's not right. But this is what I feel like is going on a lot with these characters. Like, all these people are like welcoming themselves or inviting themselves to have opinions about this group of kids. And I call them kids because they're obviously younger than me. And they're trying to do something really amazing, you know, create a safe space. Yeah. But no, then you have these negative weirdos protesting and, you know, commenting on their social media page and stuff. But then the bright part of the whole story, which I'm telling you, it's lighthearted and funny and full of comedy and full of a lot of great dialogue. But they come across a group of people that are like, we're standing with you. We're going to be with you. And they're like, well, we can't afford protection. And they're like, it's free. We're just here because you're doing something amazing. And I think it says a positive message out there for people who feel like they don't belong. What do you think, Jen?
So I really enjoyed the comic as well. It funny and or not even funny enough. As I was reading it, you know what it reminded me of, Kristen? Our group at the shop.
When it was back.
It was Yair, Javi, Nicho, me, May, and a few people who would come in and out and stuff like that. But that was like, I feel like that was like our core group. Yeah. And how even now that we've all gone our separate ways, I'm living in NorCal. May is up somewhere north. I don't remember where. I think Portland. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yair went to Illity and back. And Javi is still in Arizona, but we still like talk and communicate with each other. And like Nicho's still there, but Nicho is also like, he's moved on in his life too as well. He has his own place now, which I'm very proud of him for. But like, it reminded me of that friend group where maybe not all of us were queer, but we were different, but we made a community for ourselves. And that was a community that was fostered by you and Eddie and everybody there at the shop. And it was good. I can positively say that when I was there with all of them, those are some of my happiest memories there. I feel like that is, as I was reading the book, I was reliving back there, those moments. And I think that was really cool because, like, your early 20s is, they're not, they can be fun. They can definitely be fun. But there's also a lot of, like, mess. Like, you don't really know who you are. You're, like, trying to break free of this perception that you've built of yourself, like, from your early teens. But then you're realizing, like, hey, no, like, that was, like, I was a child. I'm an adult now, and I, like, trying to be an adult and stuff like that, but also trying to foster community with other people as well. And as I was reading it, I just kept thinking, I was all like, I'm going to be 30 this year, and that is really fucking me up. Like, I had a whole, fucking, like, anxiety/panic attack about it, like, earlier this week. And when I think about it, like, objectively, I'm just like, 30 isn't that old, but, like, it's also, like, goodbye 20s.
Right.
And as I was reading it, I just kept thinking, I was just like, that, like, it was nice to go through, or, like, at least I have that experience now, and I can now recognize it in other people. But I am kind of happy that I'm no longer in that. In that, like, messy headspace again. I can feel that how I was back then is definitely not how I am now. And it's really, really funny because when you guys were comparing me to Lala, It's so funny because now I can say, like, you know what? Yeah, I am like Lala. But when I was in my early 20s, like 19, 20, 21, I was definitely more like Laika, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely like a little bit.
I was going to say that. Like, I felt a little bit like Laika. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I think we like all at some point were like Laika, like a little bit awkward, a little bit like shy, not entirely sure, definitely insecure in some aspects and stuff like that. But definitely I'm glad that you guys thought I was that I am like Lala, because Lala is definitely the person who I want to be and am striving to be at all times. Because,
well, of course, when they reached out to her and she's like, I'm at the goth club. And tell me how a goth club could not be more perfectly named Bats and Boots.
It was like something I'd find in Hollywood. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was I really did like the book. I think it's definitely like YA, like either like 16 all the way to like 21, mm-hmm. 22, definitely.
Yeah.
In those areas. I liked you, Kristen. Was it you or Sarah? No, Sarah said that there was definitely some deeper topics that were mm-hmm. being like discussed in the background. And I think that's true, because there's this perception. I think there's what people don't realize is that there's the stereotypes of that, like, America, specifically white America, has upon minorities. But then there's also the stereotypes that our own cultures impose upon us without ever really like addressing it. Like, there's a certain, like, or mm-hmm. like, not stereotypes, well, no, they are stereotypes, but also expectations and like realizations and stuff like that. And we, like, all, I think all cultures have them, and especially in I think in the Black community there is this, like, there's definitely a perception of like you have to integrate as best as possible is the way that I can say it. Like, middle class to upper class wealth, definitely. Also a form of resistance and defiance in that, because that is a form of resistance and defiance, is earning financial stability from a country that has done its best to suppress you. There is defiance in that, but there's also a kind of like, I don't, integration, or there's another word for it, integration or assimilation.
Assimilation.
Yeah. Assimilation.
I didn't want to use assimilation, but yeah, you're right.
That is the integration and assimilation into, I want to say the person, and I'm going to say to me, because this is how I have viewed it, into this grander scheme of what is basically white America. The, mm-hmm. Because that is what it means to be accepted, especially to minorities. When immigrants come here, what is their like purpose? They want to reach middle to upper class status. But most of that middle and upper class status has been dictated by white America. So the perception of it is very white American. But what does that mean exactly? It's so nebulous, but it's also kind of, it's almost tangible. Like, suburbs, white picket fence, and also, not that those are bad things. If you want them, they're perfectly acceptable and achievable. But there is also kind of this loss of identity, I want to say, that comes with it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't fall into that identity, what are you? You're weird. You're weird, awkward, non-conforming, and you're seen as other, no matter what. And
mm-hmm.
I think that, to me, that is what that other subtext was just like, what do you do when you don't fit into the norm, but you're expected to fall into it, or you have these perceptions of it. So what do you do? You find community. And I think that's what mm-hmm. this especially is. And I mean, the group and everything, that's what this book is about. It's about community and finding your community, which is, I mean, with Heidi Ho closing, and like, I'm still very, very sad that it has closed. But I also know that there's a lot of public spaces like that are closing or that they're no longer available, either due to the pandemic, but also to this. There is a cultural change happening. I can't quite put my finger on it, but I can definitely tell with even with just Gen Z, as they're hitting the like workforce in full force, there's a cultural change happening, and I don't think a lot of people know how to do it, and I don't think the people who are changing it are also know what to do with it. Because when I talk to the Gen Z people that I know, they're so lonely. Mm-hmm. They're like so fucking, and that's not a unique experience. I thought I was very, very lonely when I was in my early 20s until I found like kind of like my group and stuff like that and my friends and stuff like that. And even now at certain points, I do feel very, very lonely. But there is a unique, almost pointed, acerbic loneliness to the newest generations. And I don't know if it's due to technology. I don't know if it's due to this cultural change of, I don't even want to say like selfishness, because it's not selfishness. There's a lot of good things that have happened that are very pointedly not selfishness. But there's, it's almost, I want to say, I don't know how quite to say in this, but there's just, I don't know. It feels like there's a lot of communities that are being lost, or that they're being like driven out, or like completely erased. And so what do you do when that happens? You build more community. You build a different community, and you try to find people who will want to accept it. But it's just that right now we're kind of in this transitory period, but I think we're always in this transitory period in whatever decade that there is. There's never going to be like a real like lull or peace and stuff like that. And I think that's what this book is about. It's about community, finding your community, building your community, and staying and fighting for your community. And I really, really like that.
I definitely agree with that. And your point of being seen as other no matter what, like this group of friends, they're all part of the Black community, but for whatever individual reason, each one of them is being seen as other within that community. But the irony of it all is that even the Black people judging them have people looking at them and seeing them as other as well. Yeah. So I really enjoyed the lightheartedness put in there, the jokes, Lala's character. But with Lawrence being able to pinpoint his topic and his theme throughout, and to really be able to, at the end too, just really highlight that you're not alone. Like at the end of the day, you're not alone. And so I really also, Sarah brought up the t-shirts. I really was looking at all of the shirts and going back and reading them, and it gave me an idea. There was one in the back. It wasn't really a character that had a name, just had like a couple of panels, and you can see that they had one of those shirts on that had different names on them. And the names were McDuffie, Turner, Ormez, and Harriman. And I only recognized Ormez because we did we did a whole entire book review on Jackie Ormez. We read her biographical graphic novel that we had a while. This was a while back. We were still in studio. So pre-2020. Oh, yes. And so I knew that Jackie was a cartoonist. So I did some Googling, and I found out that Dwayne McDuffie is actually the creator of Milestone Media. So, which means that he created the publishing company who created Icon, Rocket, Static, and Hardware, all big Black characters, back in the day. And then I wasn't quite sure about Turner, but I did find that Michael Turner was a comic creator as well, who founded Aspen Comics. And then George Harriman the third wrote Crazy Cat, which was a cartoon that appeared in 1913 through 1944, and they're all black cartoonists. I thought that was amazing. I wanted to get that shirt made right then and there and wear it. And it also gave me an idea that we should make a shirt like that with names of big Latino creators and comic creators, iconic ones who paved the way, and then have our name on the bottom and just say Comales y Comics or something. But anyway, thanks, Lawrence, for that idea. But there was just a lot of history being thrown in the comic as well. And another little Easter egg, we had, I noticed that Lawrence kind of wedged in his wife's name as well. So, which is funny because I didn't realize that he was married to her until Sarah brought it up. But when I read Brinache, I was like, hey, I know somebody who uses that name.
yeah, definitely. Anyway, I think this comic is a gift. I think it gives on so many levels, and it definitely gives on the comedic level. The art was amazing, because sometimes when you saw emotions kind of like really bubbling up, even the art style changed, and I thought that was really clever. I really, really enjoyed it. Even the font that the comic uses throughout the whole book, I thought was really, really, really great. It really went with the storyline. But yeah, I think this comic's a gift. I think we're definitely ready to rate it. So I'm going to go first. I really loved it. When I first started reading it, I just started laughing. My favorite part in the beginning was the t-shirts. I thought those were great. I really found the chapter breaks and the chapter names to be like super cool. And just the undertones of very serious topics married with comedy, I thought was really great. The characters were great. We didn't really need any background, because I think the art gave us the background of these characters, and definitely all have full personality. Even the owner of Books and Things, I thought was so cool. The way he like would go off on his like little rant, I thought, you ghosted me, and it's like, no, we saw you on Saturday.
You want to know something? I had the exact same thought. That's so funny.
This book just keeps getting better and better, honestly.
Yeah, it's giving on so many levels. So for me, this is Sarah, I'm gonna give it the whole panaderia. The whole panaderia, like, I don't know what kind of beverage, but the whole panaderia for sure. What about you guys?
Well, this is Kristen, and for all the reasons that we've already said, I also am going to give it the whole panaderia and a burger, because the burger had a big role in the storyline. So I definitely think that a burger deserves to be a part of the ratings. And we didn't talk about our rating scale. We rate on a scale of 1 to 3 conchas, with 3 conchas being the most conchas that Jen's mom ever allowed her to eat in one sitting. Mm-hmm. And if it is a book that exceeds that rating, we give it the whole panaderia. So I'm going to give it the whole panaderia with a nice juicy burger on the side, and I can't wait to have this book and recommend it to so many people. We'll probably actually be able to see him. Does he show up to Modesto with Brina? Has she been to Modesto?
I think actually that's where I met him.
Okay, yeah,
I think it was only once. I've been to them.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully they'll be there this year. Hopefully. We'll hope and wait and see. But they're new parents, so.
You gotta teach them young. Bring them along. First comic convention.
Have them set up your table with you. But I'm gonna change my rating to the whole panaderia and a juicy burger. What about you, Jen?
I am also going to go with the way Kristen has rated this because honestly, A1 thinking. So the entire panaderia and then a trip to the burger joint.
Yes.
Like, just really, really good book. I really, really enjoyed it. I do think that it is definitely a book that is not for everybody. I think it's best to be given to, like, people who are YA anywhere from that 16 to, like, 22, 23 age range. But I personally really enjoyed it. So,
me too.
Yeah. So if you know they read YA, give it to them. If they look like they need a YA book in their life, give them this one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, and that has been our
book. Before we been our book review, I just wanted to address the fact that it's called Black Word, and that is a meshing of the words black and awkward. So that is kind of just giving you a highlight of the theme and the group of characters that you meet in the book.
All right, guys, now it's time for En la Librería. Jen, what do you have for us today?
So today I have Alternative Baltimore number 1. Headlines are half the story. A heartfelt exploration of what it means to live in Baltimore, where everyday voices go unheard and history is forgotten. So, this is being launched by Jai Devin from Baltimore, Maryland. MD is Maryland. I remember that. Jai is a young comics artist, researcher, and forgotten archive enthusiast. Their work centers around their complex love of Baltimore's history and intersectional identities. When they aren't hiding between library stacks, they can be found spinning yarn for their friends. This is actually the first project they've ever created. And here's the story that they have set up here. Why would you move to Baltimore? Isn't the crime insane? Have you seen the news out there? From the headlines, you would think Baltimore is and has always been nothing but inner city Mad Max. Let's challenge this. In Baltimore Alternative, we follow our author Jai from their exploration of the controversial drag queen divine to what it feels like when you suddenly find yourself on the other side of fear-mongering media coverage. Research. What if your final thesis was a comic book? A lovely peer asked me. After burning out from 3 years of researching computer ethics and assisting in gender and sexuality research coding, I knew I needed to try something new. This comic is based not just on real-world experiences, but countless hours in libraries, archives, and walking on-foot camera in hand. Why? Simple. Baltimore is abundant in untold stories from minority populations most likely to be reported on in media. People of color, queer people, and religious minorities have been an integral part of this city's history, yet these perspectives are often left out or misinterpreted. During one of my in-person adventures, I found myself in the crosshairs of the very problem I had been studying for months. With nothing more than a camera and notepad, I became a primary source debunking a very dangerous article. Future. This issue is only part one and the very tip of the iceberg. There are months of research notes, street photography, and infinite headlines from today and decades ago left to bring to life. With your support, this small issue will continue into larger future releases. Local printing. We are dedicated to supporting the Baltimore community and therefore promise that all printed copies will be printed locally. Each booklet is 15 pages, excluding front and back covers, with a tentative size of 6x6 inches by 10.25 inches. Digital copies will be delivered as a PDF. So it's kind of, as you said, this is their final like thesis. For their, I'm guessing for their MA. Yeah, what if your final thesis was a comic book? You only do a thesis if you're getting your master's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because of your dissertation, that's PhD, baby. So Jai is asking for, let's see, their base pledge starts at $5, and you can always pledge without expecting a reward. The digital copy is $5. The physical copy is going to be $10. And then at $25, you get a signed copy plus a special acknowledgement. And those are the three tiers. I have in our Ana Libre, I've done other college projects as well from like groups and stuff like that. And they've, most of them have been successful and they've delivered on the goods. And this one seems really interesting because like, what do we know about Baltimore besides, you know, what we see on news? I think
on the wire.
Yeah. On the wire, of course. Can't forget the wire. But as I was, as I had been like looking at it, I was just like, yeah, like when people like think or talk about either like New York or Los Angeles, it's usually like either stereotypes or over exaggerated news. And how about like, oh, but it's so full of crime. It's so dangerous. Like, how did it? It's really funny because at work there was a lady saying like, oh, I'm going to Los Angeles. And I was just like, oh, whereabouts? And she's like, oh, I'm going to Redondo Beach. I was just like, oh, I was like, Redondo Beach is nice. I was like, Redondo Beach is nice. I was like, but I grew up in downtown LA. And she said, and you survived? And I was like,
oh my gosh.
So funny, I just
responded.
Imagine if you would have said South Central.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually why I was going to say South Central, but it was an older white lady. So I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to say downtown Los Angeles because it could be any part. But she was like, and you survived? And I was just like, I'm here, aren't I? Of course it's right, lady.
Oh yeah.
But there's that perception of Los Angeles. And so I think this is something, especially like my Los Angeles is different from the media Los Angeles, which is different from people's perception of Los Angeles. And that in itself, my Los Angeles is going to be different from somebody who's part of LA County, but had never grew up in actual Los Angeles. So
yes.
I thought it was nice because I would like to know more about Baltimore, about these other groups that live in Baltimore and the makeup of Baltimore, because Baltimore is a big city. It's a proper city, respectfully sized. And they're actually not asking for a lot. They had a goal of $600. They're currently at $466 with 19 backers and 26 days to go. And the artwork that they have featured like on here is pretty good. It is admittedly a little bit light on the details. Basically, all that I said is what they have. But I think when it's someone's thesis and stuff like that, I think it's important to them. And I think this is definitely a faith thing, but also supporting someone in fulfilling their like thesis. So definitely check it out. It is Alternative Baltimore number one. And it is actually a project that has the label of Project We Love from Kickstarter. So that's a pretty good seal of approval as well. So check it out.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Juntos y Fuertes. Kristen, what do you have for us today?
So our segment, Juntos y Fuertes, is our segment where we highlight groups or individuals who are members of marginalized communities and the projects that they are working on. And today I have a book, and the book is from Mujeres de Maíz. And I don't know where, I think I first was introduced to Mujeres de Maíz in a Los Angeles zine fest. They are a group of activists that basically are gathering together to raise up art. And they call it artivism. And they have a book that they are publishing, and it is called Mujeres de Maíz en Movimiento. And it is spiritual artivism, healing justice, and feminist praxis. And basically, it's an anthology that features over 40 artists and writers and includes visual art, poetry, testimonies, and academic essays on the deep, decades-long her story of art, activism, community, consciousness, cultura, sisterhood, and solidarity. And it is going to be basically presented at a live art show and book release. And that's going to be happening Sunday, April 7th from 5 to 8 in Los Angeles. It's going to be at the Floricanto Center for the Performing Arts. in LA, in East LA. And it is free. You can join them in celebrating their 27th anniversary and the release of their book anthology that documents the deep decades-long her story of Mujeres de Maíz. And you can go to mujeresdemaiz.com. That's MujeresDemaiz. And you can register, RSVP, and you can even pre-order a copy of their book. And so, again, that's going to be Sunday, April 7th from 5 to 8. And you can RSVP for free tickets and purchase your signed book. And they have special packages. So just really quick about the book. It's chronicling its quarter century long her story, collecting diverse stories with attention to the larger socio-political context. The book crosses conventional genre boundaries through the inclusion of poetry, visual art, testimonies, and essays. Mujeres de Maíz's political, ethical, spiritual commitments, cultural production, and everyday practices are informed by indigenous and transnational feminists of color, artistic, ceremonial, activist, and intellectual legacies. Contributors fuse stories of celebration, love, and spirit work with an incisive critique of interlocking oppressions, both intimate and structural, encouraging movement forward. So there's a lot going on in the book, and I can only imagine what a great event this is going to be. Again, it is a live art show and book release for free Sunday, April 7th from 5 to 8 at the Floricanto Center for the Performing Arts.
All right, guys, now it's time for saludos, and saludos goes out today because of our book review, and goes to Laneja House, and you can find them on lanejahouse.com. It's L-A-N as in Nancy, E-H-A-H-O-U-S-E, so lanejahouse.com. And basically about Laneja House is a family-run small press run by cartoonists Lawrence Lindell and Brina Nunez. Laneja House is built on a foundation of family, love of comic books, scenes, and coffee. So check them out. You could also find them on Instagram at Laneja House, just that, L-A-N-E-H-A-H-O-U-S. So saludos goes out to them. They're putting out a bunch of great stuff, including the book we reviewed today. There's zines available. There's online cartoons, so check them out. Like we said, we've interviewed Brina before on Las Pláticas, and we met Lawrence before at conventions. So check them out. Saludos goes out to them. All right, guys, that brings us to the end of this episode. Where can they find us, ladies?
As always, you can find us at comadrecomics.com, our website where there are links to all of our social media. And don't forget to join, like, and subscribe to our YouTube channel so you don't miss any of our Las Pláticas shows coming up. We have a ton of Las Pláticas up on YouTube where you can actually see us interview amazing creators and talk about their projects. And like Sarah said, we have one coming up with the founder of the Latin Comics Art Festival coming up in March in Modesto.
Absolutely. And if you're in the Modesto area or don't mind driving, how many hours, Kristen?
Like six.
Anyway, if you're in the Modesto area in March, please come over, say hello. It's a free event, free parking. There's going to be food in the back that you can purchase from local
that's the best part.
Oh, my God. I had this birria grilled cheese. My God, that was so good. Delicious. Anyway, I'm so hungry. But yes, so we will be there. So hopefully come on by, say hello, talk with us. You know, it'll be fun. It's great. And it's a wonderful, great free event. So come on down. Thank you so much again for listening. Thank you guys for having us in your lives for an hour and 15 minutes at a time. Thank you for your support. We have been your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
And that's on Period Network.